Welcome back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that is currently not being investigated by Major League Baseball. How you doing, Remy? You do some anime recently?
Yes, I've been putting a lot of money down on my anime of the season. You know, I've got some backup bets, safeties on Demon Slayer. You know, Konosuba 3 is coming out this season, so I've got about $100 on that. I really want to go on an outsider. You know, obviously, I don't want to put all my money on a 2-1. I'm looking for at least a 5-1, or maybe like a 7-2. You know, maybe like that new season of Black Butler. That's been an old standby, but it hasn't really picked up speed recently. So that's, you know, that's a pretty good contender for an upset, don't you think?
Quick question though. This doesn't have anything to do with that time you asked me for my bank account info, does it?
You know, I'm thinking like putting together a whole hand, and I can't really put enough effort into it.
I was looking at my statement, and like, you know, someone's been consistently withdrawing like $285 and
yeah, you know, I don't play huge hands anymore. I feel like it's better to play small amounts of money. Just, you know, you can spread a small amount of money over a wide series of bets. You get a better return. And of course, it's more fun that way. You know, it's a lot of anxiety when you put a lot of money on riding on one one bet. You want to kind of spread it out for safety's sake, of course. Hey, did you know there's a baseball anime premiering this season?
Oh, hey, I love baseball.
Yeah, baseball's great. It's really good. You know, that's a MAPPA show. Maybe I'll put a little Boku on that one. I don't know. What have you been doing?
Spring is upon us, and so all the shows that we started from the winter season are starting to wrap up. Talking a little bit about some of the new stuff that we watched this season.
Oh, right. Yes. Watching anime. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. I got
you. We're gonna circle back to the bank account stuff. I really need to...
No, listen. No. I mean, look, I have also been watching anime.
People are asking
just
questions.
A lot of anime is... Yeah. I mean, I've been watching anime.
Oh, really? Tell me about some of the anime from winter season that you liked.
Okay, well, you know, first of all, I didn't watch as much anime as I wanted to. I think we made a lot of promises.
I don't think either of us did.
You definitely
watched more than I did.
I definitely watched more than you did. Look, a lot of games came out in the last few months, okay? Okay, you can't really blame me for not watching as much. We had, you know, Final Fantasy dropped, and then Unicorn Overlord dropped. And
I've been playing Persona 3 Reload.
You're playing Persona. I'm playing Dragon Dogma now. I just don't have as much time. I've got to be killing dragons.
I had to start a new Elden Ring character for that DLC that's coming out in 5 months.
Yeah, you definitely needed a new character for that. That was really important. You should play Dragon's Dogma. You should jump in there, man.
I've been thinking about checking it out.
It's got a PC release.
You know, we've both been playing Helldivers quite a bit.
Yeah, Helldivers, we've been playing that.
That was kind of my monthly allowance for game purchases. You know, with the expensive games these days, it's like $70 for a fucking game.
Yeah, and it's like $3 for a glass bottle of Coke now.
Is that true? That can't be true.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. End of Western civilization right there.
Yeah, it's all falling apart. You know, the value you get out of Dragon's Dogma is pretty good, though. Like, you can play that game for a very long time.
I've always been intrigued by the series. I remember when the first one came out, because it was around the same time that I was, like, starting to get into the FromSoft games.
Yes.
And so it was, like, almost kind of like a choice. It's like, all right, do I want to check out Dragon's Dogma or do I want to play Dark Souls? I went to Dark Souls. And
which way, Western man?
Yeah. and you know, I've been there ever since. It's actually become quite an issue for me personally.
People have made a lot of Dark Souls comparisons for obvious reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
JRPG kind of action adventure style. You kill a lot of dragons. There's fantasy stuff involved.
They both have dark in the title.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Not two, though. Two doesn't have a subtitle for some reason.
So it's Dragon's Dogma, colon, Dark Arisen.
Yeah.
And then that is followed by Dragon's Dogma 2.
Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yo, they should have called it Dragon's Dogma, Dragon's Dogma. Well,
check this move out, though. Let me tell me what you think about this. You boot up the game, and you get to the title screen, and it just says Dragon's Dogma.
No 2?
No 2.
Are they going to do one of those dramatic flourishes after you beat it where the credits roll and then suddenly it flashes a big 2 behind the title screen and then it's there?
I have no idea. Frankly, from what I've seen out of these games, anything could happen. Anything. That's kind of the magic of the games.
Okay, what's your job? Tell me about your job.
Okay, so I've got a job. Right now I'm playing, it's first run, so obviously I'm playing my Guts character. Mm-hmm.
Gutsu.
So I've got a big guy. I made him look like Guts. He's got a little cut on his nose. He's got a huge ass fucking sword.
You're playing a big sword guy.
Big sword guy. I started off as a fighter, but I unlocked warrior, which is the big sword guy, pretty early on. So I'm almost at max level with warrior. After that, I might try one of the newer ones. I might try the Spellblade thing, because that looks kind of cool.
Spellblades are cool. Shooting lasers from your sword. That's always neat.
Yeah. I've got a quest right now where I have to, like, go do an archery competition with an elf, so I do have to switch over to being an archer at some point to complete that thing. But man, let me tell you, every single time I think I got a lock on, like, how this game works, it throws something weird at me.
I mean, I'm still not entirely sure, because, you know, I'm unfamiliar, but what is the mechanical loop like? Is it just a straightforward 3D action RPG? Like, what are we working with here?
There are constantly weird things happening. So you think, like, at the beginning of the game, okay, pretty straight setup. You have a guy, you learn a particular weapon style, you get quests from, like, the big town, you go out of the big town, there's monsters out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta kill those monsters.
Oh, yeah, gotta kill the monsters.
Some of them you, like, just hit. There's little goblin dudes that you can just smash around. But then there's a fucking cyclops, and that dude is fucking 20 feet tall, and you gotta literally jump up onto his back, crawl up onto his neck, and then hit him in the eye to make him fall over so that your entire party can run up and wail on him.
That's kind of cool.
Fucking cool as hell.
Yeah, we got health bars.
Oh, you got health bars? Yeah.
Do they do damage numbers?
They don't do damage numbers. You got to kind of feel that out by yourself. There's also, like, no lock on.
Okay.
So you're just swinging shit around.
No Z targeting, huh?
No Z targeting.
Okay, at this point in game development, I feel like not including a Z targeting type system is such a pointed choice, right?
Yes.
Like, that's not something you forget to put in. That's something that you leave out on purpose.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm wondering why. What is the benefit? Because, as we know, Z targeting is a good system.
It's good. And I do feel its loss every once in a while. I think the point is that, like, almost every single decision in Dragon's Dogma, design wise, is to fuck with the player.
This will really piss off the kids.
It kind of is. Everything in the game is meant to fuck with you. I mentioned earlier to you, and you said you'd heard some people complaining about the microtransaction things,
mm-hmm.
Where you can buy these port stones that, like, teleport you back to stones you found in the world.
Sure.
Well, guess what? You find one that you can drop on the ground and teleport to that, but once you drop it on the ground, you got to go and pick it up again and carry it around. The main way you get around in the game is you hop on an ox cart that's heading to a destination. You don't get to choose.
Oh, you just hop on the cart and hope it goes somewhere?
Yes. And when you're on that shit, it moves very slowly and in real time. You're just riding on this slow-ass fucking cart.
Oh, it doesn't even do a time skip. You just don't have to hold the controller to move is basically the benefit.
There is a button that allows you to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
But if the cart gets attacked, you wake up. And the cart gets attacked every time.
Wow.
My first quest I got when I came to the big town was to take an ox cart ride somewhere to teach me how to do it. Halfway through the ox cart ride, a giant fucking creature comes out of the woods at night, smashes the cart, kills the ox, kills the driver. I'm left with nothing. I can't ride the cart. It's gone. Everybody's dead and the cart is blown up. I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? That's the kind of game Dragon's Dogma is.
I mean, you're kind of selling me on this. I do absolutely want to check this out.
Oh, it fucking rules.
I want to circle back real quick to one concept here. What's your opinion on the JRPG convention of calling them jobs instead of, like, you know, a class or profession or something?
Yeah.
Jobs I hear a lot going all the way back to, like, Final Fantasy III, right? I feel like it's a weird lens to look at fantasy roles.
Yeah, you're not getting paid.
I mean, sometimes you get paid.
Yeah, maybe if you do some...
A light genocide or two of the local goblins.
You are a freelancer, though, so it's like, you're not on the payroll.
I mean, by definition, everyone's job is mercenary.
I mean, pretty much. Well, it's funny you say that. In Dragon's Dogma, they are called vocations.
Okay.
So it's a little less explicit in terms of the labor relations of the characters. For me, when I think about that, I think of Final Fantasy Tactics, because I was a Tactics guy before I played any other Final Fantasy games.
Never played Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh, I really like Final Fantasy Tactics. Yeah, yeah, I think like it's more like your major you choose in college. That's really more what it's like, right?
Yeah.
And then you're just grinding assignments until you have enough credits to graduate.
I majored in cleric at the local college.
Yeah. Can I tell you one more thing about Dragon's Dogma?
Okay, one more thing.
Here's the thing that really tripped me up. So people complain a lot about this game. I don't know if you've noticed that online.
I've seen a little bit of ire thrown its way.
I've seen a lot of people complaining about various mechanics in the game. One of the bigger ones is that pawns, your party guys, they're super weird. I really don't even understand the lore behind it, but it's basically like these weird dudes you summon from an alternate dimension to hang out with you. And they are like, they're made by other players, which is really strange. It's almost like an asynchronous, like Dark Souls summoning thing.
I mean, are they explicitly in the text of the game being pulled from another dimension?
Literally, yes. They are literally textually being pulled from a different dimension.
Because I'm familiar with the pawn system where you can just like hire little underlings, right, to fill out your group.
They step out of a rift in reality and go, hey, I'm from another dimension. I'm here to help you with your quests. Do you want a potion?
That's so weird.
It's very weird.
That seems like it's so obviously a deliberate, I don't want to say ripoff, but evocation of the Dark Souls mechanic, because it doesn't make sense in this context the way it does in Dark Souls, where that is very much playing with the concept of time not really flowing the same way that we would think it, right? You know, the whole concept of the Dark Souls is each player's save file, each unique player's save file out there is its own timeline of the events. And they've all become like compressed and overlapped.
That's sort of what is implied in Dragon's Dogma, because you create at the beginning of a game your canonical pawn. And then your canonical pawn will go out into the world and other people can hire it.
It's just pawn swapping.
Oh, yeah.
Bunch of dirty pawn swingers.
It is. It really is.
Hey, I'll lend you my slave if you give me yours.
Oh, and the pawns make comments like that. They're like, hey, in another world, my master in a different dimension had all women party. Isn't that weird? And he'd be like, yeah.
That is such a weird detail to include in the world of this game. Why? Why
every fucking did they do it that thing way? In this game is like, why did they do it that way? Which is the charm of it. But check this out. One of the things people complain about in this game is that sometimes when you hire pawns, they come over from the other dimension with an infectious disease.
Jesus Christ.
That kills everyone.
What?
Yeah. So I was walking around exploring the town and I just stumbled into a building that I didn't really recognize, and a little thing popped up and it was like, here is the morgue. When people die, you can come here to claim their bodies. If you have a wake stone, you can wake them back up. I'm like, what? What? Why would I ever need to do that? So everyone can die? Every single NPC can die? And if I need them, I have to spend one of these wake stones to bring them back to complete their storyline or something? What does that mean? If I leave them dead, like their stories are over? Or does something else happen? How do they die? This is raising so many questions. And while I'm doing that, I'm walking out of this morgue, not scripted at all, completely randomly. Some fucking monsters wandered into town and started killing everyone. I had to go and kill them before they killed any of the named NPCs.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got confused. The way you described that, it sounded like when you pull in a pawn from another dimension, there's a chance that they'll come in just with a pandemic level disease that kills everybody in your world.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, wait, is that what you were saying?
Yes, that happens.
And what do you do about that when it happens?
Nothing. You can't do anything. You're fucked.
Did you just have to reload a save?
No, you only get one save.
So what?
You have to continue the game without those NPCs. You have to just finish the game off without those NPCs.
Well, okay, so it's different than everyone can die if they get the disease. I thought it was implying that they just pull in and a scripted event starts where everybody in the world dies. That's what I was thinking.
No, it is... I have not gotten this. This hasn't happened to me yet. And I intentionally didn't read the detailed descriptions of it, but it does seem to imply that actually your pawn goes insane while you're sleeping and kills every NPC around you. You wake up to piles of corpses.
These pawns sound like a liability more than anything.
They are. Oh, and by the way, if pawns fall into like a river or the ocean, they die immediately. And monsters can pick up your pawns and throw them
into the ocean.
Yes, into the ocean. Griffins can swoop down out of nowhere completely randomly, grab one of your pawns, and then fly away with them. This game is fucking insane.
I mean, if I assume the pawns don't get paid a whole lot, and if I had to essentially be someone's like personal assistant with risk of getting carried away by a griffin, I'd probably go insane and kill all you guys too.
One of the things, this is really fucked up, but like one of the plot things, pawns don't have souls.
What?
And their only reason for existing is to serve the Arisen, which is a position that your main character occupies. The Arisen is chosen by the dragon. The dragon chooses an Arisen by pulling his heart out of his chest. This guy is chosen basically at random, it seems. Also, the kingdom that you are in, the Arisen is automatically made the king.
What kind of system is that?
It's really fucked. I guess I do prefer it to just a hereditary system, but it's still pretty fucked. The main plot of this one is that a fake Arisen has taken the throne, and you need to usurp him.
But he's the usurper.
Yes.
You need to usurp the usurper.
Yeah. And pawns basically go, hey, I don't have a soul. The only reason I exist is to serve you, the Arisen.
Oh, man. Imagine like going into your first day at a new job in an office building, and your boss is like, oh, and hey, these are the interns. They don't have souls.
They don't have souls, and they only live to serve one guy, and we don't know who that guy is.
And then they just get randomly pulled through a magical portal every once in a while.
Yes, they're just like, whoops. And there's towns that are like, we discriminate against pawns. We're racist against pawns. You're not allowed to bring pawns in here. It's so wild.
Well, you know, an influx of cheap labor is going to upset the economy.
You make that joke, but you start off in a pawn enslavement labor camp.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, a guy has gone around collecting pawns and turned them into slave miners. This is one of the wildest games I've ever played.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about some anime, huh? Let's move
okay,
on.
Okay. The amount of time I just went over Dragon's Eye, I think that adequately explains why I haven't watched all the anime I promised to watch. I think you understand now.
I get it.
Yeah.
You are forgiven.
I've got to play more of this game. I gotta play more of this game, dog.
I gotta get back out there. That's how I feel about Persona right now. I got into the gameplay loop and it's itching me.
You finally hit the groove.
Yep, I gotta fuse my weird BDSM Digimon.
Dark Angel Mon.
She's called Lilim in this one.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Not Lilith. That would be too on the nose.
A little bit too on the nose. All right. Well, let's start with something that we both watched that is new this season.
Anime.
We talked about it a little bit before, but now it's not done, but it's still airing. 12 episodes are out. Dungeon Meshi, Netflix, Studio Trigger, killing it. I am loving it so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say much because obviously it's going to continue. We're only at the halfway point.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing I want to say about Dungeon Meshi is I am honestly surprised how faithfully they've done it. And I've only noticed a couple of cuts from the manga.
Yeah.
And I think they were good cuts.
The fact that I don't remember specifically what was cut until going and looking it up after the episode is out, I think speaks for their decisions on that editing.
Yes.
I don't see anything wrong with the stuff that was left out. If we can talk in detail a little bit about it, the one thing that I saw people giving some grief to about the most recent episode.
What? Who?
Yeah, some losers online with no lives.
Name names.
Jim and and Alice.
Jim and Alice. Well, these dumb assholes are wrong.
Yeah, I know they're wrong. They're wrong.
Obviously.
But they were kind of there. It seemed like maybe there were some jokes that were originally planned for the episode that got cut, leaving some punchlines hanging. The one that stood out to me is there's just a very quick scene of them cutting up the red dragon tail and Chilchuck in the background, you know, lamenting about them wasting it. Which was set up in the manga earlier with him doing a whole speech about how valuable all the different parts of Red Dragons were.
That is just a retread of the treasure bug joke anyway, so it's it's whatever.
No, I'm not saying that they were wrong to do it. Like I said, I liked everything that they've done so far.
Yes.
And I don't miss anything that got left out, but that was one thing that I got noted. Another one was people were saying the Trigger style in certain areas wasn't a good adaptation of Kui's art in terms of, I guess, tone. They think Trigger is a little bit too frenetic and bouncy to capture some of the more serious down-to-earth moments. I don't agree with that. I think they've been doing great in both the quiet and the loud, times.
Yeah. If you think that, you're objectively wrong. That's dumb. They're doing a fantastic job. It's actually kind of jaw-dropping how faithful they've been. 99% of the manga, the anime we watch is manga adaptations, and not even like a quarter of them are attempting to be this faithful. Like, it is the weirdest complaint to be making about Dungeon Meshi.
Well, what I love, and it's killing me that I'm not seeing Dungeon Meshi's numbers doing more on streaming sites. Right. And obviously Netflix doesn't publish their real numbers, but
yeah, they basically lie about all that shit.
Yeah. We can get an idea of numbers from, let's say, alternative websites that are not Netflix that I do not watch this show on. I do pay for Netflix and I do watch it there. I want to make that clear.
Oh, I see. You're talking about those bad sites.
Yeah, those bad sites.
For a second, I thought, oh, he's set up a data scraper.
No.
Oh, he's getting into the Netflix APIs. Oh, wow. That's a lot of work. He's really putting the legwork in.
Anyway, what I'm trying to get at is I think that we can glean a little bit of a trend from numbers on those sites, and Dungeon Mesh she doesn't seem to be breaking through to, I would say, the wider diaspora of anime fans.
Well, I will say there is definitely a selection bias because the people that use the bad sites are bad people, and bad people have bad taste in anime.
It's true.
I'll leave it at that.
Nah. That is a good argument that I hadn't thought of.
Yes, think about that next time.
But what I love most about Trigger is Trigger has a specific style, right?
Yes. Not,
yeah. Like in the way they animate certain actions and scenes. And I love that they can still be so faithful, like, to an almost panel by panel recreation from the manga, and that you still get these little kind of like spatterings of them breaking loose into their into doing their own thing, like all of the scene, the flashback scenes of Laos and Fallon when they're kids, and it's kind of like this weird stretched out surrealist like memory of what a kid would remember of that time. It's evocative of that, which is very cool. I like stuff like that.
Well, one of my watch partners did point out something that I find really great about the manga, being that Ryoko Kyui is so good at character profile and character design in general, that when characters are, you know, shown younger or in different states, you can recognize them based on their characteristics, which is, let's say, not the most common in anime. You know, most anime, there is an anime face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anime face is a huge problem.
That's what you get. You get anime face. And that's why characters had to adopt, you know, in the years we've been doing this, characters have to adopt different colored hair, exaggerated costumes, right? Mm-hmm. Big or small builds, because most of the time, every anime character looks like every other anime character. And Ryoko Kui is really good at not doing that.
Well, one of the things that I love are all of those back pages from the Tankobon releases where Kui does kind of like, this is what each character would look like as each of the other yes. different races in this world.
The species crossover grids.
Yes, those yes. or just kind of like...
They're great.
The little movement studies that she does.
Can we call them species?
Yeah, species
can
works.
Can we agree maybe that we're going to... call them species.
that's fine by me.
Okay. It's just so weird.
I feel yes yeah, the so term weird. Fantasy race has become kind of a weird sticking point.
It's so weird
in the last decade or so, huh?
It's always been weird.
I mean, I guess it's always been weird, but we're talking about it now.
Yeah, you know, listening to people talk about the races of man, it's like, oh, come on, you guys.
Can we talk about the streetwear sketches, though? Because those are by far, like, the coolest shit.
Oh, yeah.
And I love when manga artists, like, do stuff like that. You know, streetwear...
Yeah, it rules.
Like alternate costumes, experimenting with stuff like that. It's so fun to see.
Well, can I tell you something about manga in general?
Mm-hmm.
I can usually tell how much I'm going to like a manga based on how the mangaka draws shoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that your big tell?
Yeah. You can really tell like the tone and style of a manga moving forward by how they draw shoes, I feel like. Yeah.
You must hate Kingdom Hearts.
I do. I hate it so fucking much. It's not rock solid, but generally that it's a really good tell.
Who has the best shoes?
Of manga going right now?
Sure. We'll narrow it down. Of stuff going right now, who has the best shoes?
Well, you know, I've always liked about Jujutsu Kaisen that Gege Akutami does... pretty great shoes. They're not the most distinctive. I usually like when they do big chunky shoes, like not necessarily the most realistic shoes. So I think something like, I think Gachi Akuta, which we're going to have to talk about extensively at some point, we'll get there. But Gachi Akuta is probably the best looking shoes in the game. And actually just the best looking outfits in currently going manga right now. The amount of style oozing out of that fucking comic is bonkers. It's fucking insane.
Dope. All right. Well, enough about Dungeon Meshi. What else? What else new? Tell me about some more anime.
All right. I watched a few shows, more than you. Obviously, you kept chugging on with Hokkaido Gals.
Yo, listen, I have a disease, okay?
You are mentally ill. I understand. I'm leaving space for you.
My doctor said you have to be nice to me.
You know, we both watched Dangers of My Heart Season 2, but we've talked about that show so much.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
It's still good. I like Dangers in My Heart a lot. I think those characters are just adorable in a way that so many rom-com characters are generic nothings.
You know, because he's a weird little kid and you were a weird little kid.
No, I was dope as fuck. I mean, I was cool as hell, man. I can't relate. but I did watch some other shows. I watched Ishura, which is, I think, the big one, because I didn't know anything about this show, and I had no intention of watching it. So this one is probably the biggest surprise of the season for me. So I definitely want to talk about this one.
Okay, tell me about Ishura.
I did describe it to you a little bit, right?
I'm looking at some of the promo images. I'm going to be honest, it looks like generic faux isekai fantasy stuff. There's a skull, a skeleton in a robe, and a dude with a sword and a headband. You know, I've seen this. I've seen this before.
Yes, that was what kept me away, obviously, to begin with, because it looked like bullshit. Let's be honest.
There's a blonde elf. Come on. There's a blonde elf.
There's a blonde elf.
Who wears green.
She wears green.
Come on.
You gotta wear green if you're a blonde elf. There's complimentary colors.
Doctor Strange is in it, apparently.
Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
I don't remember a Doctor Strange. You must be looking at different promo material. Here. That is what kept me away, is exactly what you are describing. Ishura looks, from everything on the outside, like it's going to be a generic fantasy isekai.
Okay, and it's not. I assume there's something interesting about it?
Yes. I would describe it as a deconstruction of the idea of isekais, which I found fascinating.
So
he's pulled up. Nate has sent me the promo picture he's looking at, and this is our main cast. You'll notice the guy in the middle of the big fantasy world, he is wearing rolled-up jeans, Converse, and his trainer jacket.
You know what? This is coming back to me. This was about the isekai world where it's like always pulling in isekai protagonists and they're fucking up the world, right?
Sort of, yeah.
They're like fighting each other?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, this is the most interesting parts of the show because this show doesn't really have a main character. There is someone who is centered as perhaps the thematic main character, but the story does not treat any of these characters as a central protagonist. Which I find, again, another thing I found fascinating.
So
the thing about the isekai part is that there are a few of these guys, isekais, who are these characters that supposedly come from quote-unquote our world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a really interesting twist on that idea, which does not get expounded on. There, we only get, like, hints and flashes of this. But essentially, the characters from our quote-unquote our world describe themselves as being ejected from our world. They don't describe themselves as like waking up, like getting, you know, hit by a van and waking up in a fantasy world. They describe themselves as being discarded, thrown out of their world for some kind of offense, which is really interesting.
Like a drunkard out the back door, just a two-armed throw into another dimension.
Yes.
Get out of here.
They describe themselves as being incongruous with the world they come from.
Uh-huh.
None of the characters we meet that are otherworlders, they don't want to talk about it.
Oh, these are I was born in the wrong dimension kind of kids.
Yeah, but they don't like that. Like, they don't want to talk about their previous lives. It makes them uncomfortable. Oh, not previous lives. They have not died. They are simply ejected, by the way. That's another wrinkle. But we do very quickly get flashes, and it seems like their world is embroiled in an apocalyptic World War III scenario.
Okay.
That's the world they leave behind. One that is completely and utterly broken, which is really interesting because they are entering into another world that is essentially on the brink of its own world war, which is why these characters are all coming together. So essentially all of these characters, and we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We have about 12 characters, which is funny because we have 12 episodes. And each episode sort of centers on a different character and how they are progressing the plot. And so, again, the interesting thing about the isekai twist is that the isekai guys are not central figures at all.
So the isekai being so much of a power fantasy, the trope is that there is one dude, and he gets sent to another world, and he's like the big badass savior of that world, right?
Yeah.
So already by the fact that we have so many narrative threads, mm-hmm. each one with their own protagonist, that's already going in the face of that trope. So that's cool.
We have a couple of these guys, and they're both centered as very, very powerful, but they are immediately positioned up against other figures in the world as equally as powerful. These are like anomalous beings, and because they're quote-unquote a demon king in this world has already died before the action starts, we are centered on this very strange, like more of a political plot, which is a kingdom that has been annexed during the war against the demon king is trying to gain independence from the main empire. And these all of our main characters, all these like cheat level characters, are sort of being slowly brought together depending on like which force they've been taken in. And they're all tools to advance political agendas, essentially. Except for which I guess I would describe as our main guy. He's certainly the center of the poster that you posted. So let's call him the main guy. He has no political affiliation. He doesn't care about what's going on in the world. He makes it very, very clear that he does not care about anything or anyone.
He just wants to grill.
He just wants to grill. He's got a practice sword and he wants to use it. He hooks up with the girl that I would describe as sort of the thematic central character, who lays out the thesis of the show in the very first episode, which is that characters should not be this powerful. And it is actually like a hateful thing to be an overpowered character. She watches every single person she knows die in front of her, and then this dude appears and he's like, it would be cool and fun if I beat all the dudes who killed your friends. And he just does it, and he's like, that was fun.
That's something I wanted to bring up, because I was thinking to myself that the whole premise of this show is evocative of MMOs, right? Of players logging into an MMO world. That's what it reads like to me.
Kinda, yeah. There's a little bit of that.
Feel like there are many, 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 many anime, specifically isekai, that just do that premise as text. But this is at least putting kind of a weird little twist on it with it not being a video game.
Yes, I would say it definitely, none of the world reads as a video game. None of the interactions read as a video game. It is very much a kind of a deconstruction of the idea of power itself and the way that power is used. That girl there, she is, like I said, everybody she ever knows and has known is killed in front of her in the first episode, and a guy shows up and he basically wipes out the mobs like for fun. And she immediately goes, I want everyone who has that amount of power to kill each other and all die and be wiped out from this world. That's what I'm going to dedicate my life to.
I mean, that's cool and just and a neat thing to do. I like that.
Yes, it's great. And that is kind of our central thread that runs through everything else, because we discover, as you said, the green clad elf girl. We discovered that she is just like a backwoods hick elf girl who, unbeknownst to her, is something called the World Word. She is the single most powerful being that has ever existed in this world. She can manifest anything in reality by simply speaking it into existence. She does not understand how powerful that is, and she is being kept hidden so that she can be deployed at some point.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay, so she's the most overpowered.
Yes, but she doesn't know it, and she's just a small child, right?
Man, I hate it when that happens.
Yes, it's putting nuclear bombs in the hands of a 10-year-old, right, who doesn't understand what they are. We have a character who is a priest who has sworn to never do evil, to never kill, who is cursed with an angel that slays anyone who has ill intent against him.
Okay.
This thing is completely invisible. It just hangs around him, and every once in a while it just starts killing people around him. And
is that this this kind of ghost girl thing I'm seeing in the poster here? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and then what about Doctor Strange?
That guy is a general in the Empire's army. His whole thing is that he likes killing dragons. He's sworn himself to genociding all wyverns in the world. ironically, when as a child he saved a wyvern, a freak wyvern, a mutant wyvern that had a third arm, and that wyvern grew up to be something called the Star Runner, which is the single most powerful wyvern that has ever existed. He's a super wyvern. He flies at sonic speeds. He goes around the world collecting the most powerful magical items.
He has stinger missiles, 55 millimeter assault cannons.
He rolls around with a fucking elephant gun that he loads magic bullets into. He's dope as hell.
Hey, my dragon has three arms and a gun.
Yeah. We meet the skeleton guy, like you pointed out, who is like an undead warrior who's forgotten who he was when he was alive, but his skills remain intact. We meet a mandragora, which is just like a weird vine creature that didn't really have a sense of self until it was enslaved and put into a gladiator pit.
He's just like a weird guy.
It's very weird. We have a girl who just has a spider mech. She just has one of those. Never explained why.
Okay, so what is the tech level of this fantasy world?
They've got guns, but they still ride horses and carts.
Are they like flintlock guns? Like gunpowder, muskets kind of thing?
Sort of a musket level, yeah. But they also use magical relics, and they have the spoken word magic. It's the kind of thing where you have to chant stuff to make things happen.
Sure.
That kind of magic power, which apparently they specify people from other worlds cannot use because their brains are not set up to understand how it works.
See, that's that weird Japanese mindset that I see poking in again.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird thing. It's a language, literally a language barrier to the innate essence of the world.
That's it. That's a big part of the mindset, though. Hey, I think it's very weird. It's a little bit of a self-tell, you know?
You could definitely deconstruct this in a bunch of different ways. There's a lot of fun reads to make. But the whole tone of the show is tragedy, which also, again, I find very subversive for this genre, and I like a lot. None of these characters are heroic. None of their deaths are heroic, and they all meet very bad ends. There's very few of them make it out of the first 12 episodes. It's a real bloodbath by the end of this season. And like I said, there are no heroes here. There is just, like, senseless death.
No more heroes.
Yeah. And then by the end of the 12th episode, we kind of get the tease that, like, the whole point of these characters being amassed is to, like, discover who the true hero who defeated the Demon King is, because no one has ever figured out who it was.
They never figured out who the ultimate evil was?
No, they never figured out who killed the Demon King.
Oh, okay.
One day they woke up.
And he was just dead?
And somebody had defeated the Demon King, and no one knows how or why who did it.
Sometimes people just die. Like,
yeah,
not every
I know.
Death
That's,
is because someone killed somebody.
I kept thinking, like, what a great twist that, like, oh, the Demon King killed himself. Damn.
I mean, he doesn't even need to kill himself. Like, what if he just had a heart attack?
Yeah.
Or whatever the magical demon equivalent of that
is. He was sick. He had cancer.
Yeah. He had magical demon cancer.
He had demon cancer and he just got taken out. I think that's such an awesome idea. So, like, every part of this I find bizarre and subversive and interesting, and it defies expectations at every turn, and it is not a power fantasy in the way traditional isekai are, and it's very dismissive of the concept of isekai just to begin with. It's cool. It's really cool. This is the find of this season for me.
Okay. All right. I might check it out, but as you know, I have a standing doctor's order to stay away from all isekai.
Yeah, of course. Quick 12. That's what I'll say. It's a quick 12.
Okay. Is it finish, or is it like a setup for a season two?
I have no idea. I tried to track this shit down, and I guess it's based on a light novel, but I can't really find a lot of information on it.
All right. Well, you know, if it at least has a narrative cap on the 12 episodes, that's better than nothing.
It does. It's a complete story on its own, but it sets up for a season two, which I really hope we get, because I liked it a lot.
All right.
Let me just shout out really quick the other things we watched.
Okay.
Just to cap it off. So, other shows made it mostly through. We made it through Buchigiri, Buchigiri is a show about Japanese Muslims in Arabic Japan who are extremely horny for fighting each other. Our main character wants to lose his virginity so much that he shoots himself in the head and gets magic powers, magic punch powers from it. It's one of the weirdest things I've seen in a while.
You originally described this to me as fighting genies.
It's fighting genies. And the story has only actually just kicked in for me because I only reached like episode 8 or 9. And the dueling genies. There is a happy-go-lucky red genie who is our protagonist genie. And then there is a blue Dio genie.
Of course, gotta have a Dio.
He's an evil blue Dio. And he's doing evil Dio genie shit.
Yeah, Dio is blue sometimes.
Yeah, but he's mostly yellow. We think of Dio as yellow.
He's got a very specific color palette.
Yeah. So most of this show is a comedy about guys exploring each other's bodies. That's pretty much it. Let's see. We watched Meiji Gekken 1874. I think it's 1874. I can't remember. I always forget which year it is.
Old-timey Japanese detective.
Yeah. This is a show about being a cop. We stopped watching because it hit a tournament arc.
A cop tournament arc.
He goes undercover. He's an undercover cop at a tournament arc.
Wow.
So we were like, yeah, that sucks. Sengoku Yoko. Sengoku Yoko, I really like the comic. I haven't kept up with it. The problem with the anime is that the pacing is extremely fucked. The animation is very good. I really like the animation. I think it's surprisingly one of the best animated things this season. But it has like 3 different false starts within the first like 7 or 8 episodes, which is bizarre. Bizarre. I still like it, though.
Bit of a failure to launch.
Yeah, 3 times. It starts like, and then the rest of the story will begin now. And it's like, what? We're 6 episodes in. What are you talking about?
It would be really great if they just kept doing that until the end, though.
It would be a great gag. It's true. I wonder if that's how it plays out. I really don't know. And then finally, of course, Witch and the Beast, which I've been keeping up on. That's my number 2 of the season. I fucking love Witch and the Beast so much. I'm praying for the health and success of the mangaka so that they can come back and continue working on it, because it is one of my favorite comics going right now. I think the anime is pretty good. I think the animation gets better and better as the season goes along. I don't know why that is, why they didn't put all the animation like front-loaded into the premiere, but that's just how it shaked out. I really hope we get more episodes because the story really hasn't kicked into full gear yet. And I feel like once the story like really starts going, it's going to shoot up people's list.
All right.
And yeah, that's it. Everything else, who cares?
All right. I'm going to jump real quick before we go to break. I thought about it just a little bit. And I think the reason that I kept watching Hokkaido Gals is because it's the very, very, very rare case where I do actually like the anime more than the manga. The manga is bad, and they actually elevated it in the format. That's
uh-huh.
It.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, buddy.
Uh-huh. I have totally legitimate reasons.
Right. Yeah, that's why.
Okay, uh-huh. All right, let's go to break.
Folks, it's, you know what it is. The relentless march of time continues on. Our vital essence drains away. Our bones creak. Our muscles atrophy. Yes, it is another season of anime.
The spring season is upon us. May Day approaches. The rabbits are out fucking flowers and bees, I think. That's what I learned at Catholic school.
Time closes its jaws around us.
Please don't remind me about the passing of time.
We are all dying. And as we die, flashes of anime appear before us. The last things in our dwindling consciousness. A relentless stream of incomprehensible imagery. It is yet again spring anime. We've got quite a crop this spring.
There's some interesting stuff in here. I'm not going to lie. There's some
interesting stuff.
Stuff I'm side-eyeing as well, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, the thing that springs out to me before we even talk about shows is more 3D. A
lot of 3D.
More 3D coming at you. And you know what? Even as they get better at it, I could still tell. I could still see it.
I mean, I know this isn't spring season, but I just want to bring it up real quickly now that you mentioned the 3D thing.
X-Men.
Not X-Men. Good one.
That's 3D.
I was going to say the trailer for the Dan to Dan anime, which is coming out later this year.
Oh.
So we won't talk too much about it, but they do, you know, it's done by Studio Science Saru, who just did the Scott Pilgrim anime for Netflix.
Yeah.
Founded by Masaaki Yuasa, one of the absolute greatest. And they use some pretty noticeable 3D that I saw in the trailer, but I'm gonna be honest, I don't think that it looked bad.
What's up with the 3D in Scott Pilgrim? What's up with that?
Probably just being lazy, to be honest. But the real answer, I mean, or not real answer, but the gracious answer would be Scott Pilgrim is like very video game referential heavy, right? So having some 3D visuals in there is to be expected.
That's the excuse you're making for it.
Yes, that is the excuse. Yeah. I'm making for it.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Mm-hmm. I trust Science Saru. I think their work is pretty solid. If they're using 3D, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping it's more of a opening cinematic 3D like they did for JoJo,
which I love those JoJo openers. Those are absolute gold every time.
The JoJo openers are great. I think the 3D in that looks great. It's just you can't, I don't think you could maintain that quality over 20 minutes.
No, but yes, a lot of 3D coming to us this season.
A lot of 3D.
A bit disheartening.
It is what it is. I'm a little worried that we're never going to see a mech anime that doesn't use 3D again. Like ever again.
Well, I assume that you brought it up, that and the mech thing, because you're thinking of Kaiju number 8.
Well, I mean, I wasn't. I was actually thinking of Sin Duality from last season, and also the new Gundam show.
Okay.
Have you seen trailers for that?
I haven't seen the trailer for the new Gundam show. I did just watch the trailer for Kaiju number 8, and there is a fair amount of 3D going on in there.
Does not surprise me in the least, but the one, you know, the one for the new Gundam thing is egregious.
It's
makes me sad.
Okay, I don't want to be like categorically shitting on all 3D animation.
We aren't. We talked so much about how much Spider-Verse ruled. And I even said the thing, you know, the Ninja Turtles, the new Ninja Turtles kicked ass too.
Yes. And it can be stylized and used to amazing ends by the right people. And I wish that I saw more of that experimentation going on in anime. You don't see it a lot. That said, it's mostly bad.
it's mostly sucks. Hey, I have not watched the new X-Men yet, so we'll see.
Are you talking about the X-Men 97 thing?
Yes.
That's 3D?
Yeah, that's 3D. I guess it's a good sign that you couldn't tell, right?
I mean, I just watched a couple of the little promo things for it, but it looked like they were just trying to recreate the 90s style. I didn't know that it was rendered in 3D.
Yes, they are doing, they are trying to recreate the 90s style by using shaders over 3D animation.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's why it looked so weird in the trailer.
Yeah. If you didn't catch on from the trailer, I will take that as a good sign.
Well, okay. I caught that it didn't look like whatever the 90s style they were trying to recreate is. I knew something was different. I just chalked it up to it being digitally animated. But, you know, in 2D format.
In a different way.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, getting a little off track here because 3D is egregious. I'll point it out when I see it. But there are notable shows. Do you want to start with Kaiju number 8 since you mentioned it right off the bat?
Yeah, sure. I just watched the trailer for that. Kaiju number 8 seems to be about... a dude who lives in a world where kaiju battles are just kind of an ever-present threat, and he gets possessed by or in some kind of maybe a parasitic relationship with
the ghost of a kaiju, and it possesses his body. No, I've actually read a little bit of this. I guess it's been a while since I talked about it. This was one of those things that I said, like, the premise, chapter one starts off with such a strong premise, and then it just, like, goes downhill. Because the main character, he doesn't get into, like, kaiju battle school. He fails out. And so he becomes a kaiju cleanup crew guy, which is cool.
That's a fun little hook.
Yeah, chapter one starts off with him, like, just telling us about what happens when you're a kaiju crew guy. He goes in, and they have to cut up the kaiju, right? Because you can't move a giant kaiju. So you have to get in there, and when you cut the belly open, of course, all the guts come out, and it's awful. It stinks. You have to climb inside and, like, scrape out all the wet stuff before you can start hacking the meat up. Then it moves into, like, how do you throw away all that shit? And so they're sending the bones to, like, rendering plants and, like, the skin, the scales and stuff to, like, different factories because they can turn that into, like, armor and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, it was something that was kind of explored in Pacific Rim, Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
Kind of did that, right?
Yeah.
They had the whole, like, kaiju parts under black market underground reseller thing going on.
Yes.
And the government crews trying to clean it up. Yeah. Which is cool. You know, it's a fun piece of world building.
So I was very excited when I started reading it because that is really cool. And I was hoping we could explore that stuff because it's a fascinating aspect of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But almost immediately, a parasite jumps out at him and, like, infects him with kaiju disease, and he becomes a were-kaiju.
That's what I was trying to get at. The hook is that he turns into a kaiju.
Yes. He becomes a were-kaiju, and it turns out this is actually, like, a thing that's happened before. There are were-kaiju kind of spread out in the world, and he tries to hide it, but he can't resist, like, joining kaiju school, and he gets really good grades in kaiju school because he now has powers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes one of those things where, like, all the really good kids, like, oh, the overachiever girl is, like, in a rivalry with him, and he, like, saves her life. So now she feels, like, indebted to him when they become a kaiju battle crew, kaiju squad. And it immediately becomes very generic shonen shit, which made me very disappointed.
And turning into a kaiju is a metaphor for puberty.
You'd think that, but this guy is, like, 32.
You know, some people are late bloomers. some people need that time.
Some people it takes time. You're right.
And it's totally normal, the doctor said.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it takes a while for your kaiju powers to come in, you know? You just have to wait patiently. Don't panic. I was very disappointed by the manga, because not because it was, like, bad necessarily, but just because it does exactly what we complain about all the time. It starts with an interesting premise and then immediately becomes generic.
Help, I turned into a kaiju and now I have hair in weird places.
Scales, man. He's scaly. He's a scaly motherfucker.
Oh, he's one of those.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna go ahead and jam my thumb into this pie and pull out the biggest plum here, because Go-Go Loser Ranger starts next season. I fucking love Go-Go Loser Ranger.
You've been talking about this one for a while.
I have, because it is exactly the opposite of kaiju. Well, it parallels kaiju in some weird ways, but it is exactly the opposite because it takes its very weird premise and it continues to build on it in very strange ways, which is awesome. It kicks ass. This is, of course, the manga about the evil Power Rangers. I've seen people describe this as Power Ranger version of The Boys, which I think is maybe not... it's not doing the manga particular service because
that comparison isn't doing it any favors.
Yeah, it's not doing it any favors because it is better than The Boys by a wide margin.
I watched two seasons of The Boys and like I felt that I got everything I needed out of it.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. The Boys wasn't awful. I liked a little of The Boys. I even kind of liked that spinoff. I probably mentioned that. Generation V, I thought was like not that bad. It was had some good stuff in it.
Sure.
But like at the end of the day, we've done evil Superman so many times that like finding a good angle into it is hard.
Definitely.
Meanwhile, evil Power Rangers has pretty much only been done by Stephen King in The Regulators. And it's very bad in that. So this is exciting to me. And I really love that it is from the perspective of the invaders.
From the aliens.
Yeah, the aliens, who have become an underclass and are being used as an entertainment product by the evil Power Rangers. And the put-upon invader decides he's not going to take it anymore. He's going to revolt for the dignity of his species. and that's cool. I like that. I think it's great. That show about the Mr. Villain's Day Off that we talked about briefly from last season.
Yes.
Being sort of like a really boring version of this concept still holds true. I think this is going to kick ass. If you're going to watch one series in this season, I really think this is going to be the good one.
Yeah, okay.
That being said, I don't know the production company at all. Yostar Pictures.
You know, I'm looking at some stills from the trailer, and I'm looking at some stuff from the manga, the covers. I like the art style. That's kind of fun. They're doing, maybe this is just because I was just playing Persona, but it's got some crossover in style there.
Guy who's only played Persona. This is giving Persona vibes.
Shut up.
I love the design of the invaders. I think they look cool as hell.
Yeah. Okay. Can I take the next one?
Go for it.
I watched the trailer for, where'd he go? Bartender, comma, The Glass of God.
Glass of God, man. Talk about hyping yourself up.
I know. Well, this is a spiritual successor to the classic Tom Cruise film Cocktail, if I've ever seen one, which I haven't because I've never seen Cocktail. Okay, no, Glass of God. It's that classic format of Japanese television where people wander into a restaurant and or bar and just kind of complain about their life to the staff. And he sits there and you know, gives wise judgment on their tribulations. But the joke is that this guy, I guess, has some kind of a mysterious background, right?
You've got to have a fantastical element because otherwise you are just doing Cheers.
I mean, Cheers was great. It lasted for like 5 seasons.
Yeah, but you know what? I've seen a couple of these bartender shows and they never have a norm. It's always just the bartender.
You know what they always have instead of a norm? They always have like the lush that's in the corner and he's like the pervy middle-aged dude. That happens a lot, trust me.
Yeah, the pervy businessman who hasn't married yet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's always complaining about why women don't want him and how he's not married yet.
Why do young women not want to marry me, a creepy old man?
We were just talking about Odd Taxi, like the main dude's friend who's like some kind of monkey or gibbon or something. But, you know, he's always in the bar complaining about how he's got no women. I don't know. It looks fun. I like that. I like that kind of episodic weird format. And the hook seems interesting. I do want to see if they do any fancy, if they go into all out animation mode to do like fancy cocktail flips and shit. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Or if he mixes the cocktails in a kung fu style.
A kung fu style?
Yeah. I don't know. Like maybe he throws it up in the air and it lands perfectly on his outstretched leg after he does a kick. That would be cool. That would be style.
I guess that would be cool. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to check it out.
Sure.
I'll let you know how it is.
You know, Frasier was a spinoff of Cheers.
I did know that.
Yeah, that's weird. Okay, so my show, the next one I think is interesting to look at. I want to say the Black Butler thing, but that is just more Black Butler.
Which I'm not familiar with. I've heard about it, you know, around for a long time, I think.
Yeah, so the thing that made me interested in this Black Butler, I mean, besides, you know, it's one of those legacy, Black Butler is one of those legacy series that I have tried to get into a few different times.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of like the conceit, which is sort of like, you remember the books about the little boy genius and his giant butler bodyguard? Artemis Fowl.
Yeah, Artemis Fowl.
So Black Butler is basically Artemis Fowl, except anime as hell. And I kind of like that idea because Artemis Fowl was a book, the first one that I became obsessed with for a very short amount of time, as an alternative to Harry Potter, a slightly edgier Harry Potter, right?
Really? Can you describe that series as slightly edgier?
Yeah, I think so. And Harry
people
Potter
died in Harry Potter.
Yeah, but like, there are chapters just describing the bodyguard's luger, like him oiling up his luger. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun.
I just imagine switching over to like a Tom Clancy mode.
It kind of is.
Or that scene in Metal Gear Solid 3 where Snake is popping a boner over that new gun that he gets.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I love that. It's like, oh, look at the barreling.
The rifling is amazing. It's almost hypnotizing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like the conceit quite a lot, and also this new season is being done by Clover, so that's okay. Very interesting to me.
I like Clover. They've done some good stuff.
You know, the thing that made me bounce off, though, that I'm worrying about is, like, aristocratic little kid. Man, that's a fucking annoying trope.
Yeah, Little Lord Fauntleroy types.
Yeah, except he's a nefarious Little Lord Fauntleroy. And his butler is like a demon.
Oh, he's got an attitude, does he?
Yeah, he's got a bit of an attitude. He's a know-it-all for sure.
Is he a radical dude straight from the 90s?
Nah, he's one of those kids that is like a grown-ass man, but like with a kid body kind of thing.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
A detective shonen. Or Detective Conan.
Detective Shonen, yeah. He's a Detective Shonen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I might give it another shot. This might be a good entry point. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, speaking of stuff that we're ambivalent about, I don't know if I already don't know if I'm going to give this a shot, but I find it interesting that we're getting essentially a Spice and Wolf Brotherhood series.
Yes. I thought you would be interested in that.
I did. I watched the first miniseries that came out ages ago, and I thought it was cute. You know, like I think I've talked about it before. It's really concerned with a lot of math and pondering on medieval economics, and the attempt to keep the reader engaged or the viewer engaged is like, oh yeah, and also there's like a forest god that hangs out with him that's naked most of the time. That's like her thing. She doesn't like wearing clothes. That is, I mean, I'm not joking. That is, it's like 95% him talking about grain exporting. And then every once in a while, she's like, oh, hey, by the way, can you not be naked? It's really weird.
So he complains about it.
Yeah, well, you know, he is a protagonist in a manga, after all. He can't have overt sexual desire. Otherwise, he becomes one of the bad people.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't realize it made him uncomfortable.
Well, in the sense that you don't really want to be traveling around anywhere in medieval Europe without clothes, right? People are weird about that, just in general.
Is it medieval Europe?
It's an analog. It's as close to a pre-industrial European agrarian society. I don't know if that it quite accounts to medieval, I guess. That's not the right terminology, but I don't know, somewhere in the 1400s.
1400s?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right.
It's like there's gunpowder, but flintlock stuff, and there's no powered vehicles of any kind. They're still doing horse and carriage and all that.
Right.
But I don't know. I just think it's interesting that that they're doing, like, all right, we're doing the more faithful adaptation, but also a more abridged version, from what I understand.
Taking another swing at it. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about another one that's sort of a similar thing that I got a big of a rug pull on this one. So there's a comic called Windbreaker. Are you familiar with this?
Man, I'm not even familiar with what Windbreaker is supposed to mean outside of anime. Is it a type of jacket?
Yeah, it's a jacket.
Yeah, but like, specifically, what makes a jacket a windbreaker?
A windbreaker is usually a lighter jacket. It's usually made from synthetic material. So you think of it as kind of a flappier jacket. It's not insulated. It's meant to be worn over insulated layers as a way to literally break strong winds.
Okay. That was a thorough and helpful definition. Thank you.
You probably own one.
I don't think I do.
Well, you should. So Windbreaker, the one I'm familiar with, is a fairly long-running comic about street biking.
Okay.
I feel like it's fairly well known, kind of like a delinquent high school kid finds a new lease on life through his love of street biking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that kind of thing. So when I saw that there's a new show premiering called Windbreaker, I thought, oh, cool. Street biking. You know, I like biking personally, cycling, BMX stuff. I've always been kind of a fan there. So I got a little bit excited. Then I looked a little closer, and this is a completely different Windbreaker, apparently. Also being done by Cloverworks, this is just a generic guy fights his classmates in a delinquent school.
Oh, so nothing to do with the biking thing.
Nothing to do with the biking thing. What? It's so weird, because Windbreaker is not obscure. I think there's like, I don't know, 500 chapters of Windbreaker, probably.
That's a lot. That's a lot of chapters.
Yeah. So you can imagine my disappointment.
I mean, is it an original anime? Is it based off of a manga?
It says here it is based on a web manga.
A web manga called Windbreaker.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the long running biking manga called Windbreaker.
Yeah. How does this happen? Somebody explain this to me.
I don't know. Maybe this is like the anime version of when movies release with the same plot in America. You know, there's that phenomenon of like two movies that release close to each other that have the same plot.
I don't know. To me, it feels like if you released a new show called Friends in like 1998. It's just weird. It's just weird to me.
Yeah, no, it's not about the New York Friends. It's different Friends.
No, it's different Friends. Oh, and also, they're not friends. Why would you think that?
They hate each other.
They hate each other. Yeah, so that's one, I guess.
All right. Well, I don't recognize too much left on this list here, but I want to pick one just based off title here and have you tell me about
sure.
it.
Sure, sure, sure.
Tell me, what is Jellyfish Can't Swim at Night?
Wow.
It's an interesting title.
Yes, Jellyfish Can't Swim at Night. I do like that title. I am deeply suspect of this plot description. Just check this out. This show follows a girl who spends her nights wandering Shibuya, a place, quote-unquote, overflowing with identity. What the fuck does that mean? Unable to become anyone, what does that mean? The girl's life begins to change following a special encounter. No, no elaboration on that special encounter. I pray to God it is not a sexual assault.
I don't want to jump the gun on that, despite so much evidence in the past that that's where it could go.
Yes, this is being done by the Oshinoko Studio.
Oh, well then, yeah, it's probably that.
I just like, what? This could go either way. This could be extraordinarily like saccharine cutesy shit, or this could be deeply disturbing.
Is this based off of a manga or like a light novel or something?
It says it's original. It's original material.
Oh, an original animation.
By Doga Kobo.
Okay, well, that's something to keep an eye on then. You don't see a lot of those.
Yes, we're gonna roll the dice on that one. I'm definitely gonna watch the first episode.
I'm going to check it out. But speaking of original animations, I know we badmouthed it in the last episode when we were talking about the Roundup stuff, but I saw some clips of Metallic Rouge, some episodes of that.
Yeah.
And the animation and detail in some of those scenes, I think I might go back and check it out further.
Yeah? You're going to give it another shot?
I think that it actually might be good to look at despite just being stupid in concept.
You should do that. You should go back and report to us if it gets really good or something. My problem was not the animation quality. It was that the like monster mech designs were dumb.
Well, yeah, that was also a consideration. But, you know, I watched a clip of these two characters just kind of walking down a hallway, not really talking about anything super important in particular. And it was the most animated hallway walking scene I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta love a hallway walk. That's an Aaron Sorkin staple.
Well, it was a definite flex on like, all right, this is what we're doing here. We're gonna animate the shit out of this dumb little hallway scene.
Well, it is Bones' 20th anniversary show. It's supposed to be crazy like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So maybe I was wrong. Maybe I was wrong to pass it over. I don't know. Let's look forward, not back, though. Let's look forward.
Sure. Let's look at a couple. So here's another notable one. This is something I've read to completion, though a sequel series did start up recently. It's called The Fable.
Okay, and this has nothing to do with the comic series Fable.
It does not have anything to do with Fable. It is just called The Fable.
And it doesn't have anything to do with Peter Molyneux's video game series Fable.
Peter Molyneux has nothing to do with The Fable. He's not involved in this project.
Oh, thank God.
Hey, I love Black and White. A couple of those Fable games, too, also I really, really enjoyed. The Fable does not refer to the story it is telling. It, in fact, refers to the main character whose nickname is The Fable.
Oh, that's just as dumb as I was hoping it would be.
It's pretty bad. He's called The Fable because he's such a legendary hitman. Ding, ding, ding. We've got a hitman.
Oh, no.
Nobody knows for sure if he even exists. Wow. So this is a lot like a comedy version of a Korean gangster movie I really, really liked that I described previously. Though that one is very, very sad. This one is just absurdist and entertainingly funny. The Fable is told that he's picking up too much heat. Him and his handler have to go undercover and live quietly for like a year or so to shake it off. And so he's kind of a deadpan character, but with enough personality to make like following his ordinary citizen life fun. And his handler is this woman who has the most bizarre fetish I've encountered in any manga. She really likes to go to bars and flirt with guys and make them get so extraordinarily drunk that they like puke their fucking guts out while she films it.
And that's like her, and she gets off to the videos of the guys puking?
I don't know, but she loves to do this, and she finds it extraordinarily funny.
Is she just like really into doing this, or is like this like a sexual thing for her?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, because when you describe it as fetish, that to me, that you're describing it as something sexual.
Well, I'd call it a hobby, but that is not a hobby.
It can be anything could be a hobby.
Okay, well, it's her favorite hobby then. She finds it very funny, and she does it a lot. Because she has a lot of time to kill, and she thinks it's funny. I don't know. It's very weird. It's a very, very weird inclusion in a story that doesn't really have anything to do with that.
Man, do you ever think that like manga and anime is the reason they tell script writers day one to like don't write about hitmen?
No, I think that's because of Tarantino. I think it's Tarantino's fault. Anyway, I really like the manga, even though it has, you know, this really dumb premise that has been done very badly over and over again. for like the last 30 years of manga. If you do not get this confused for other ones, because this one's actually like not that bad. I will definitely be giving this at least the first episode.
All right, I'll trust you on this one. I'm iffy on a Hitman story, though.
Yes, I know. You should be deeply suspicious of any Hitman story, but I like this one.
Okay, well, I'm just about out of steam here, but I wanna bring up one last pressing issue in the upcoming season.
Okay.
What can only be described as the fight of the century, nay, the millennium. I am, of course, talking about the Netflix-announced Hanma Baki versus Kengan Ashura.
Yeah, isn't this a weird one?
What is going on there?
I have no idea. I don't understand this, especially because, as you'll remember, I did call Kengan Ashura the
Diet Baki.
The discount Baki, yeah. Kengan Ashura is a lot lamer than Baki, but obviously they have very similar premises. They're about fighty boys.
Well, yeah.
Little pretty fighty boys.
That's not hard to understand why this is here, but it's like, was the demand for this really out there? I guess so.
I don't know. I think maybe the thinking is just Baki has been very popular on Netflix. Kengan Ashura has been very popular on Netflix. It's as simple as that.
And who is making this? Is this going to be like, I assume, obviously this is non-canon.
Oh, yes, of course. We wouldn't want to upset the incredibly intricate and totally linear canon of Hanma Baki. I have no idea. This is a complete mystery to me. The only thing that got me interested in it is that Kengan Ashura, the characters from Kengan Ashura, they're not doing that side of it as 3D like they did in the show, which is like, oh, thank God.
All right. Well, at least they're animating it.
Yeah. And also, I love Baki. I love Baki so much.
So as long as we're going down this route, if we're talking about matchups, who else should Netflix do next?
Well, obviously, the crew of Dungeon Meshi should fight the crew of Cyberpunk, right?
Oh, do a trigger battle?
Yeah, we would do a trigger battle, of course.
Uh-huh. I would like to see Geralt from The Witcher fight, I don't know, probably any of the food monsters from Dungeon Meshi. That would be a fun fight.
That's what you're into?
Yeah.
See, I would think something like the cast of the live action Avatar fighting the cast of the cartoon Avatar, Roger Rabbit style.
Okay, what about the cast of the live action Avatar fighting the cast of the live action Yu Yu Hakusho?
Oh, that would be good. I would say Yu Yu Hakusho versus One Piece, right?
Oh, that is also a good one. Yeah. Well, we're only talking about Netflix exclusives, right?
So far.
Yeah. Okay. Cast of Castlevania versus whatever that vampire romance anime that was on Netflix was. I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, you mean Vampire in the Garden?
Yeah, something like that.
Yes, yes. What I would be interested in, just to finally put it behind us, the cast of the Dota anime versus the cast of League of Legends pseudo anime. Just let them battle it out.
Let them fight.
Let's put this thing in the ground.
All right.
Oh, okay. It sounds like you're out of it. Let me just call out a couple things. The Look Back movie is coming out in the spring season. Check it out.
What?
The Spy Family movie is coming out. The Concierge, which is being done by this one is being done by Production IG.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes. I'm it looks great too. So I'm really excited for that one. There's a Bocchi the Rock movie coming out. I don't know. Maybe you'd be interested in that. I don't know. And of course, Dead Demons Day Destruction is coming out in a kind of a two-part movie release.
Great title.
Which is going to be fantastic. This is like a legendary manga. Truly bizarre and interesting. The animation looks incredibly good by Production H, which I don't really know anything about. Oh, it looks like they did the Orbital Children before that, which also had incredible animation. So I think this is going to be cool.
All right.
Yeah. So check that Spy Family movie out. That shit's coming out in theaters, dog.
Oh, shit. Do you think we're going to get a U.S. release?
Yes. The U.S. release is in theaters. It's imminent.
Oh, no way. I'm still not going to go back to a theater for that, but cool.
I am. I'm going to see that for sure. I mean, I don't know what the distribution is. Maybe it won't come to my town. But I will drive up to 30 minutes away to see the Spy Family movie in theaters.
They had to put up police barriers to block off all of the horny Yor shippers from seeing her in IMAX.
Don't remind me. Okay, that's wow. We did a real breakdown. That's spring season.
And there's more that we didn't even get to.
There's even more than that. Who knows? We're gonna come back in a couple weeks, maybe about a month, to like get all of these premieres out of the way, and then we'll break down what seems good, what seems bad. I've got a pretty good idea right off the bat, but I don't want to be as biased as I was last season, because like I said, Ishira, I totally said was gonna be bad, and it turned out to be good. So
keeping an open mind and open heart.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep an open mind this time, even though I hate anime so much.
All right, dear beautiful, tall and handsome listeners, thank you again for sticking it out with us. That was a breakdown of the upcoming spring season.
What are you recapping the episode? What's happening right now?
I'm recapping your recap.
Oh my god, just say goodbye to the dear people, Nate, and let's get the fuck out of here. I'm hungry.
Okay, check it out on Blue Sky. Yeah. We're on Twitter. Yeah. We're on YouTube.
Do the things.
Okay. Do the things.
Click the buttons.
Okay. All right. Bye.
No, it's not. Oh my god. You went to Catholic school.
Yeah, who went to Catholic school here? Oh my god. I had the training. You
look at this Catholic boy over here. He doesn't know shit.